Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Paige O'Hara, who you all know as Belle in Beauty and the Beast, Disney's animated classic. It's coming out of the vault. It's getting a Blu-ray release. First of all, just before going to the movie, because I have a million things I could ask you about the movie, but how cool is it to have a Blu-ray, and why should our listeners run out and grab this if they, let's say, own the old VHS in the big box or the DVD? Why the Blu-ray?
Well, actually, it has so many wonderful bonus features on it. It's worth it just for those. Just check them out. And the one with Alan Menken, of course, there's a little documentary on my life in there too. But some wonderful stuff with Alan Menken, and it's fantastic. You're gonna want it. Definitely.
What juicy fun tidbits are in the little documentary on your life, huh? What might not we know about your life?
That I'm a diehard NBA fanatic.
Really? What team?
Yes, Cleveland.
Okay. Congrats.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, I was standing, screaming, crying when LeBron. I've been following LeBron since he's 13.
Would Belle say to LeBron?
Oh man, you know what? I would be tongue-tied then, just like I am right now. Wouldn't know what to say to him. Just that I love him to death.
Yeah. So. Well, now in Cleveland, there's something there that wasn't there before. A championship.
See?
There you go.
And there's something there that wasn't there before. LeBron. Yay!
Yes, we got that. That, I'm pretty sure, is a money bite. Awesome. Let's go into the movie a little bit. Belle, I mean, it's not every day we get to talk to a Disney princess, but Belle was, I think, like a different sort of princess, almost one of the first like modern princesses. You know, it wasn't sort of, you know, waiting for Prince Charming to save her. Mm-hmm. She was sort of out, you know, thumbing her nose at Gaston and doing her own thing and reading books and, you know, sort of this modern woman. Talk about sort of Belle's legacy in that regard and how she's inspired a new generation of girls in a new way than old Disney princesses.
Oh, it's been phenomenal, and you have no idea how many of the little girls that come up and say, finally one that loves to read. I feel like a geek, and now I don't feel like a geek anymore. And the fact that she has brown hair and brown eyes was a big deal to a lot of young girls. So she's finally a Disney heroine that looks like me, you know? So, I mean, but she was definitely a revelation. Belle, and then now since then, Mulan and several of the other Disney princesses have followed, you know, to be more modern, you know. But it's... she's changed the whole way that people look at it, because she was not looking for a prince.
Yeah.
And when I was doing the film with Gaston, some of the scenes they let me ad lib, and I let him have it a few times. That then we realized, okay, it's a period piece, Paige, you can't say that to Gaston. But Richard White's an old friend of mine, so it was fun to pick on him.
Was he actually in a booth with you? Because I know when these animated movies, you guys are recording separately a lot. But were you actually in there with him?
Actually, this was not the norm. Yes, I recorded with Richard and with Robbie Benson in the same room. And they let us do that. And it was much harder for them and much more expensive. But I think ultimately the relationships came across a lot better in the film because of that.
Did you ever get to meet Angela Lansbury, or are you in separate rooms?
Yes, I met Angela, and I'm a diehard fan. I saw her 6 times in Gypsy when I was a teenager. I would sneak into the theater at intermission and watch the second half because I was so broke starting in New York.
She just came to In Blythe Spirit here at National Theater and she's still killing it.
She's killing it. She's amazing. She's amazing. And I've told the story today, but it's when she did came in to record Beauty and the Beast, the song, she'd flown all night long and had no sleep. And they said, well, we can cancel it. We'll do it another day. And she said, no. Comes in after all night traveling, nails it in one take. And people are crying. It was so beautiful what she did.
That tale as old as time. That gives goosebumps just picturing her voice doing that.
I know.
And then were you a little, you know, it's got to be, it's weird. It's like she can be this creepy Manchurian candidate mother and then the sweetest mother of little Chip and Mrs. Potts. Like, talk about her range. I mean.
Oh, my God. I think she's the quintessential Broadway star, you know. And I have a lot of Broadway stars that I love. But she can play film. She can do stage. And she's magnificent in whatever she does. I mean, she's just a true pro. And she introduced me on the Oscars. I was so excited.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's so cool. Well, speaking of the Oscars, I mean, Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture back when there was only 5 nominees back then. And, you know, nowadays, I know they've expanded it, so we've had Up and a couple, you know, it's like 10 nominees or something, so it gets in there. But back then, there wasn't even an animated Oscar. I think they invented that for Shrek years later. So, I mean, talk about sort of the, you know, the historical arc of cinema, even, that, you know, Beauty and the Beast is going to forever hold the spot where it is the only Best Picture nominee in a 5 category. I mean, you know, that's pretty special.
Well, what you just said is absolutely true. And in that category, it's, you know, it'll be the one of a kind forever. And it did win the Golden Globe, by the way, for Best Picture.
But it was because they do comedy, musical, and drama. They separated it out, right?
Yeah. They did. And then the other family film won the Oscar, Silence of the Lambs.
What was it like getting, because that thing swept. That won everything that year at the Oscars. But what was it like sitting in the audience and saying, all right, we'll give it to Jodie Foster and Anthony Hopkins. But how does your Beast compare to his Hannibal Beast?
Oh, I know. His Hannibal Beast is pretty frightening. But my Beast is much more lovable. Yeah. Yes.
I don't think Be Our Guest has the fava beans in the canteen. No. You know, it's try the gray stuff.
Try the gray stuff. I still don't know what that is.
We don't
the
know
gray stuff.
What?
After all these years, I keep getting different answers.
But it's delicious.
But what do you think it is? What's gray and delicious?
I don't know. Gray Poupon.
I guess so.
Well, talking about, you know, the songs and everything, I think Beauty and the Beast was, I mean, there had been obviously songs in Disney movies before, but I feel like this one was one of the most, like a musical. Like, you know, right from the opening, you know, in that short, or that scene, Bonjour, Bonjour. Right. And it's almost like instead of songs just breaking up the scenes, it was almost like you're telling the action and the story in the song. There goes the baker with the tray, like, oh, you're describing the action with the song.
Exactly. And when they first wrote it, it's 7 minutes long, and Howard Ashman said to Alan Menken, we cannot submit this for Disney. They're not going to take this song. It's 7 minutes, you know? And Alan talked him into it, and they loved it, you know? But it is like the old-fashioned musical, and they wrote the whole film that way. And that's why they look for Broadway actors to play all the leads. And we all ended up being Broadway actors. We are, you know, even Robbie Benson, people forget, was a Broadway star when he was 14. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of, when the American Film Institute did their best musicals, Beauty and the Beast, I think, was the only animated one in there. So, I mean, that's pretty good company. Do you have a favorite musical?
Oh, boy. That's a hard question. I have a lot of favorites. I love Gypsy. I think it's the most perfect written musical ever done. But I also am very partial to Mame. Jerry Herman is a dear friend of mine, and I love Mame a lot, too.
You mentioned that you were on Broadway stars. Remind some of our listeners that maybe discovered you as Belle first, what you had done, you know, stage-wise before.
Well, I did Ellie Mae Chipley in Showboat with Donald O'Connor on Broadway in 1982, and I played Ado Annie in Oklahoma, which was the national tour. I did Fontaine on Broadway in Les Mis. Yeah. Edwin Drood, I played for a long time. Betty Buckley originated it, and I ended up being the understudy to Donna Murphy, and then I went on the national tour with that. And then I did a lot of the Carnegie Hall revivals of the early Jerome Kern turn of the century musicals. Oh Boy, Oh Lady Lady. Jerome Kern, man, you didn't get any better than that.
You can't talk,
and when we did those at Carnegie Hall, there were no mics. It was fill the hell, you know, fill it.
Catch some of us up on what you've been up to after. It's been a long time since Beauty and the Beast. What are some of your highlights since?
Oh, you know, it's actually right now I'm painting for Disney. They hired me as an artist for, I'm one of the Disney fine artists, so I'm doing oil paintings of Beauty and the Beast. Now I've gone from doing the voice to painting her, which is really fun. And I'm loving it, and I'm selling really well. And I did spend a lot of years there with taking care of my parents after the movie came out, and they both passed away, and my artwork. And I did 9 years of Menopause, the musical.
Yes,
at the Luxor, the Hilton, Harrah's, and I finally, a little over a year ago, said I need to stop. Just need to stop and have a life and get to the gym.
Now, did you get into painting at a young age? You know, when you were a kid, or how did you start?
I was 3 years old when I started painting, and my stepfather was an architect, and he kind of encouraged it a little bit, And then I realized when I was taking acting class at 5, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, my teacher was kind of rough on me. And
Where is this? Where'd you grow up? Where are we?
Fort Lauderdale. Okay. It's in Fort Lauderdale. Okay. And so I would paint watercolors for Miss Yoey, my acting teacher. And she was a lot nicer to me. She loved my watercolors. And then when I went to New York, I would paint at night and sell my paintings on the street. So wow. I moved to New York at 17.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome. And so having that painting background and now doing it since painting, well, oil paintings of Beauty and the Beast, does it help you appreciate just how amazing that animation is?
Oh,
and even, you know,
yes.
even speak to that as well as sort of, you know, I want to say the directing, but, you know, mm-hmm. it's different because it's, you know, animated. But there's moments like a crane shot down from the chandelier during the Beauty and the Beast title song. There's stuff that you don't find in most hand-drawn stuff. So just talk about sort of how
gorgeous. Well, you know, and a lot of people don't realize the film was 4 years in the making. And it would take an animator an entire week to draw 20 seconds of film. So, I mean, what they took their time. I mean, this is like the last hand-drawn movie, you know? We had the computer generation for the ballroom scene that was just being invented. But it took a long, long time. And I think that's also what's so great about this movie is that the characters, because they were hand-drawn, they're so realistic, you know? Yeah. And they're actors with their pens and their paintbrushes, you know? Belle is Marquen and James Baxter as much as she is me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of great Pixar computer animated stuff. Like, I love Toy Story and Nemo and all that, but there's something cool about that hand-drawn animation, that cell animation. Do you sort of pine for those days or wish it would come back more? You know, it almost gives the characters a little more of a soul, if you ask me.
Thank you for saying that. I think it does. I think it really does. I think the reality of it does. And it would certainly get a lot of artists a job back.
Yeah, right. That's true.
And because it's kind of it is a lost art, and I do hope they bring it back. I think they will. I think people, it's going to be a phase right now with what they're doing, and it's all wonderful, but I think there's going to be a yearning for something new, and I think that something new will be something old that they're going to
bring back. Something there that was there before.
Well, exactly.
See, we're just weaving it all in.
Oh,
it.
We are.
What about, take me into Be Our Guest. You mentioned the gray stuff, but, you know, why is that such a show-stopping number? And talk to me a little about Lumiere and, you know, the voice actor. He steals the show.
Oh, my gosh. Jerry Orbach. Oh, my God. You don't get greater than Jerry, God rest his soul. I mean, talk about Broadway stars. He was a star as a teenager on Broadway and all through his career, and people knew him from Law & Order, you know, because he was great on that show. It's a true Broadway song with a great Broadway actor and singer performing it.
And did you meet Cogsworth?
Oh, gosh. David Ogden Starr, are you kidding? He's the funniest guy, and he had libbed so many lines that ended up in the movie. Yeah. You know, the flowers, chocolates, promises you don't intend to keep. Yeah. He did all those.
I'm amazed you remember it so closely. Yeah, and I don't know why I'm surprised, but your voice sounds exactly like Belle. You know, it hasn't changed a bit. So
thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. It really is my voice. And Howard Ashman really, he was the one that said, no, we're not going to change her at all. Yeah. She's got a womanly quality, but they actually, I don't know if you know this, Belle was the oldest of all the Disney princesses.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they actually state an age in the movie?
They all had the same idea that she was like 22 years old.
Okay.
And most of them and the other movies are all teenagers.
Well, she looks pretty good for 22 because I saw what the Cocteau movie back in the 40s. Uh-huh. And so, you know, I mean, I wasn't alive back then, but, you know, she aged pretty well. Did you ever see that one or any of the previous?
Oh, of course. Okay. Of course I did.
And that's, like the teardrops turn into diamonds.
And, I know. It's really strange. Yeah. And that's part of the reason why it took so long to get this made, because they were trying to come up with ideas other than just going to dinner every night, you know. It's like, so it was, so Walt kept passing on it. But I think that Walt Disney is looking down, smiling on this one.
I would think so, too. Well, thanks so much for joining us. This was great. Congrats again on LeBron and the Cavs and something there that wasn't there before. And this was awesome. I really appreciate it.
I did, too.
Why should we get the Blu-ray? Final.
Get the Blu-ray. You're going to love it. You're going to love all the bonus features. I promise.
All right. Thanks. You heard it here first from Belle herself.